My name is Kennedy Sam, and you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU. On this program, we sit down with creatives and community leaders making an impact in our artistic and cultural sector. We are wrapping up this month with a pretty interesting episode, if I must say. First, we are sitting down with Fiona Bond, Executive Director of Creative Waco, who is sharing some great news right off of Governor Abbott's desk. In the second half of the episode, you will hear from Travis Scott and Zach Burke about the story of Tom Wilson, a Wacoan music producer that you've probably never knew existed, but you should. Later on, we'll hear the segment David and Art with David Smith. To kick off the show, we welcome Fiona Bond to tell us more about Waco's music-friendly community designation. In last month's episode, we sat down with Todd Burka, and he told us a little bit about Waco becoming a designated music-friendly community. Can you give us some more detail about this whole process?
Yes, so this was just announced formally yesterday, and the presentations were made yesterday. And this is really wonderful news in the middle of a pandemic. It's great to have some positive news for the arts community. And basically, this means that Waco, along with 12 other cities across Texas, has been designated a music-friendly community, which means that there's a level of recognition of the quality of musical output in our community. It means that we get promoted at state level as a music-friendly city. And it also means that we get more tools in the kit for joining up the different components of our music industry. And, you know, everything from music education all the way through to people who are professional musicians. Every musical sector, so from classical to hip-hop, trip-hop, country, rhythm and blues, jazz, you know, all the musical genres are included in this designation. And it's a great, I think we're actually the smallest city to have this recognition so far, which is a wonderful feather in Waco's cap.
Yeah, I think Fort Worth, Austin, and Lubbock are all on those lists. So we are up there with some pretty great cities.
Yes. El Paso, San Antonio. Yeah. So it's kind of the cities you would expect. And then Waco is right up there with them. It's great.
Right. So this had to be a pretty collaborative project. Like you mentioned, all of the different forms of music are represented. Can you, in a time when musicians and performers are being hit really hard due to the coronavirus, what impact does this designation have on their work, you know, once we transition past the season?
It will mean that we are able, I mean, the very process of becoming a music-friendly city means that we now have greater connectivity between all of the different players that make music happen in our community. So that's really helpful. And it does mean that when the wheels start to turn again on being able to have live performances, there will be, I hope, more opportunities. It's a great way of connecting people who promote live music with people who make live music. In the short term, we are really trying very hard to figure out how to do some kind of virtual music festival or some kind of event that will showcase and champion and pay local musicians to celebrate this new designation. I'm hoping very much that we can figure out how to do this in a way that doesn't feel like just another live stream. Not that I have anything against that, but we want to do something different. And we want to really find a way of celebrating this in a way that feels relational and connected. That's the bit we're kind of missing right now, is that wonderful buzz you get from going to any kind of performance and being alongside other people who are enjoying the same experience.
As Waco already has been recognized by the state to be a film-friendly community, and we have our registered cultural district, what does that mean to have this new addition for our journey into becoming an artistic and cultural hub?
It's part of that journey. You know, the performing arts have their own special place in this journey. And music is something that really has always been associated with Waco. We always say, you know, Waco punches above its weight musically, whether that is in terms of the, you know, the fact that we've got Baylor, the Waco Symphony, MCC has a really outstanding classical music, and piano and opera and music industry program. We really bring a lot more to the table than most communities our size. And so that recognition is really important, the fact that it gets promoted at state level. But it's very much about kind of turning around the reputation of what people expect from Waco, and also trying to create that story around the fact that we're already doing these things at a really high level. And so when people want to find musicians for a film, for example, we now have that connectivity between the film industry and the music industry. So there are all kinds of different channels that this opens up. This particular designation does not come with funding, but it does show... It shows that we're serious as a community about growing this part of our artistic profile.
Yeah. So as you mentioned earlier, yesterday was the official ceremony, kind of accepting the designation. And we had the Texas Music Office representatives and Mayor Deaver on the stream. So what's next? How can we support our musicians, our performers right now until we can have that event, whether it's virtual or hopefully in person in some form?
Yeah, well, the first thing I would suggest is to go to makeitinwaco.com, where we actually have musicians who have recent recordings, live performances, streamed performances, and you can even hire a musician for a patio party or a street party. And when we say party, obviously right now we mean with face coverings and social distancing, but you can have a live musician in your backyard or on your street, at least to have a live music experience when you can't experience that in restaurants or in bars or, you know, the places that you would normally go to for live music. And that covers all genres as well. So if you purchase a patio musician experience on makeitinwaco.com, you actually, not only does that pay a musician who badly needs the work right now, but it's also just a fabulous way of engaging someone who plays the kind of music you like. So whether it's a harpist or whether it is a jazz singer or a guitarist, there's literally something for everyone.
Thank you, Fiona, for sitting down with us today.
You're very welcome. Delighted to be here.
You can visit makeitinwaco.com to hire a porch performance or support artists in all of the ways that Fiona just mentioned. Also, you can visit creativewaco.org/blog for more content related to this episode. Coming up next is this week's episode of David and Art with David Smith.
Is there any way online content can be made as effective as in-person content? Can it even be close? I know school districts are wrestling with this question right now. It's at the forefront of their concerns as the uncertainties of the coming school year loom just ahead. I also know very few teachers who think that online content comes anywhere close to the experience of in-person education. It really doesn't. The arts world is facing the same kind of conundrum. Arts organizations from the Waco Symphony Orchestra to the Metropolitan Museum of Art, whose entire reason for being comes down to providing a way for the public to have face-to-face encounters with great art, have temporarily lost the ability to provide that encounter. So, what to do? Well, in many cases, performing arts organizations and museums have put their product, as it were, online for people to view, to watch, to experience. I don't know anybody who would say that looking at a Matisse or a Rembrandt online is at all the equivalent of seeing it in person. Holland Carter, art critic for the New York Times, recently listed some of the qualities that virtual visits can't give: the immediate experience of texture, scale, and color, the sensual incidents and accidents of light, sound, scent, air, and opportunities for conversation with other people who are with you and having the same experience. I don't know anyone who would say that seeing a play online is the equivalent of seeing it unfold in front of you live. Watching Hamilton on Disney Plus is not the same as literally being in the room where it happens. A reporter for the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Jeremy Reynolds, recently described COVID-19 as an iron curtain that has descended between performers and audiences. What a wonderful metaphor that is, and historically informed, too. But what can online content provide in the face of that impenetrable curtain? Christian Cox, The Pittsburgh Opera Company's marketing and communications director has said that its online offerings, like performances and its recent gala, are more about keeping up engagement. In other words, reminding the public that the arts still exist, that they still count in our lives. You will have noticed that we are a people who need constant reminders of almost everything, even those things we think are most important. If online content can remind us that the arts still have their power, even in crisis, if we can be reminded that the arts can still speak to us right where we are, that would be enough.
Welcome back. You are listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWVU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. Today we are joined by Travis Scott and Zach Burke, the host and executive producer of a new podcast, Invisible Icon, The Tom Wilson Story. Who is Tom Wilson? Well, you're about to find out. Hey, Travis and Zach. As first-time guests, I'd love to welcome you guys to the show and thank you for sitting down with me.
Well, thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you very much.
So I want to preface this conversation by saying, since the podcast just launched, don't be afraid to stop me because I don't want to ruin or spoil any episodes or any special, you know, gotcha moments. So if I ask you a question, just be like, you got to wait.
I got you.
Okay.
I think we both know the juicy stuff that's coming, so we'll be able to kind of...
Pretty much. Zach knows more of the juicy stuff than I do. So they only allow me about one episode at a time so that I don't fill in any of the spoilers along the way.
So he's learning with everybody else.
Yeah, so you're on the Game of Thrones kind of.
Pretty much, yeah. It's exciting. So yeah, I'm discovering the story as I'm talking about it.
So you guys launched the Invisible Icon Tom Wilson Story podcast on July 20th. Can you give a very brief introduction of who Tom Wilson is and his influence on the American music scene?
I would say that the Invisible Icon name is so dead on for this. And to me, it's because he's a guy that I came across that I'd never heard of before about 2-3 years ago when I finally discovered him, and then realized that he was, you know, from here in Waco, and wondering why I never heard of him, then with him being a local figure. And just starting that journey into the research of how much he shaped music. And it's not like one of those things where it's a cute, like, oh yeah, no, he did a lot for music. He did a lot for music, especially in the 60s with the artists he worked with. So to see how big of a hand he had in music and how little recognition he would get, except for the people who were like, you know, real music nerds about producers for everything that might have heard of them. The basic general public, I think there's no knowledge for the most part. And hopefully we can bring his story out there full fold to everybody to enjoy and learn about him.
And one of the things in particular that I love about this story is that one of the things that's necessary in telling the story of the greatness and legacy of Tom Wilson is, you know, talking about like how all of those pieces of his life developed. And that means talking about the greatness and the legacy of all the people surrounding him. And the deeper you get into the story, like the more interesting it gets. It's just, I mean, literally every page in the writing of all of this, it's like you're just getting deeper and deeper and finding these Easter eggs just all over the place.
And to add to Travis's point there, like we started with Tom's childhood, and that's like where we decided to start the story. But in researching that, then we found out so much information about his dad and his uncles, and then information about his grandfather of like, you know, how he moved the family down here from Illinois to take a college professor job at, you know, in Seguin, and then move to Waco, and how big education and music is in their lives. Like, to be able to see where that started from and being able to tell that too with the rest of the story was really cool.
So for people who aren't too familiar with the music world and how it works, what exactly is a producer's role?
So to me, basically, and I take this just from my experience of working in radio for so long and being like a production director there. Produce to me is kind of a fancy word for the guy that makes everything work. He brings everything together. In this case, like let's say he brought in an artist. He dealt a lot with Sun Ra to begin with. And so he brings Sun Ra in for a recording session. well, Tom probably set up the other studio musicians that are in there. He's making sure all the levels are right. You know, they record, take however many takes it is. He finds the best take. Then he masters it down and produces it down to the song that it's in and about there. So while the artist is producing, you know, it's just this very raw piece of art that then Tom is able to sculpt into what it is once it finally reaches everybody's ears.
Wow. So he had his hands in everything.
Yes. Pretty much everything. Yes. Yeah. It's you see the differences when every once in a while artists release their like original takes or their raw tracks or, you know, things coming out of the vault of their original recordings of something. And, you know, I mean, literally it often sounds like, you know, someone singing by themselves on a microphone, like in their basement or in their kitchen or whatever, like the same way that we all sound when we do that. And then, you know, when you listen to the final track that comes out, you know, on the album and is played on the radio and things like that, like the difference in getting from that one person to this, like, you know, this potential masterpiece of music is all the producer in between. Mm-hmm.
So Tom worked with, like, some real heavy hitters. We're talking Bob Dylan, like you mentioned, Sun Ra, a bunch of people. So seeing that he grew up in a segregated Waco and was entering these spaces during the time, I guess, during the Civil Rights era, was this unusual for someone to be a black man in those spaces?
Absolutely, yes. So part of the way that I got involved with this story was they, Katie and Jacob and Zach and producer Mike, reached out and said, hey, you know, we're working on this new project and we want you to be a part of telling this story. And so I was like, okay, well, you know, tell me what this project is. And they were like, okay, so we're talking about a producer who was a, you know, music producer in the 60s. And I was like, okay, that's cool. He was like, pretty much the most iconic producer of the 60s. Okay, that's exciting. And also he's from Waco. Okay. And also he was a black guy. Okay, now I'm really interested. And it was like, oh, and also he went to Harvard. And it was like, wait a second, how is... In the 60s?
So, from Waco.
So all of there are just, I mean, it's like I said, like pretty much every turn, every additional layer of his story is like, wow, this is, you know, amazing that, you know, that any single person did all this. And the fact that it was the black guy that was doing this, you know, back in the 50s and 60s as well. And, you know, I mean, and some of the, you know, earlier parts of his story with his parents and with his grandparents as well. I mean, you're seeing a similar trend of, you know, being the sole, you know, African-American person in segregated spaces, or the sole African-American person that's integrated into normally segregated spaces, and being able to make just immense contributions because of that.
And to me, I think that was kind of part of the fun of including everything about his family in the first episode, too, because you see not only is Tom a trailblazer in a way, but his grandfather was the first African-American to graduate from the college.
From Lombard College.
Yeah, there you go. In Illinois before he transferred here. Same with one of the first college professors. And just to see how that family as a whole just worked and strived and didn't let anything going on, you know, culturally around where they were affect them from making strides, I thought was just absolutely fantastic. And part of the reason I love the story even more is because you're seeing growth and accomplishment from everybody out of this group. And I think that's just awesome to see.
Yeah, that's one thing I really enjoyed about listening to episode one was it wasn't just about him. It was about all of his family. And one thing that really stuck out with me was kind of like the flashback of like verbal recollection that you guys did with Terry Blues. So it was really fun seeing how you guys, because when I think of podcasts, I think of, you know, people just sitting around talking, telling stories. But like I was cooking while I was listening to it. And when I heard you guys do that, I was like, I got a mental view of him laying in his bed and, you know, dealing with his sickness. And I mean, I'm not going to ruin it for you people who haven't listened to it yet, but.
No, Terry absolutely killed it. Like the first time I heard that after Mike sent us out, like, hey, here's what I have so far. I was like, I had a little doubts at first. And as soon as I heard it the first time, I was like, okay, this is going to be awesome.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed when I got to hear it. So, it was, and I love moments like that where it really does, you know, take you back to, back to those scenes. So I was, you know, it's one thing like reading through the script and reading it and trying to get in the headspace of it. But when you finally hear it, it completely transports you there.
Yeah, so Travis, you mentioned earlier Katie and Jacob with Keep It Go Louder involved with this, Mike with Rogue Media Network, mm-hmm. and then, you know, you guys. How many people do you guys have on the team, and what was everybody's role in pulling this together?
I'm thinking. It's all the ones mentioned.
Right. Also, Lindsay Lippman.
Mm-hmm. And that's it, right?
I think so, yeah.
The six of us? Yes. I had to check my math for a second.
All right. I'm just going to let you do that.
Oh, that might not be a good thing. But, yeah. No, so Lindsay, Mike, Jacob, Katie, Travis, and myself is pretty much the core of how we've, like, talked, discussed, worked on interviews. We have a long, long just text group that all ideas are kind of thrown into. And it can be like we get, you know, one idea and we talk about it for like a good 30, 40 minutes till we figure it out. And then it'll be like just some random day at 2 p.m. and be like, hey, had this idea, and send it out. And so it's a great, I would say, just kind of creative space for everybody to go in and add, hey, here's what I think we should do. Here's what I think we should do. And it's great to see everybody's image kind of mold together and become like just one thing that's turned into the podcast we have. But I think we have a fantastic team working on all those.
Yeah. And I mean, I agree that our team it's a fantastic team and it's very, very collaborative. And we've worked together, like in a pretty much seamless way. And everyone, you know, everyone is offering input at every stage of the project, and so there's when the scripts are written, and then all of us go through and review it and add in all of our little pieces, and so we're all we're all doing research, we're all like writing what the final product is going to be, picking the songs, picking where things are going to go in the project, and then finally, like, it's the last stage is producer Mike tying it all together and then getting an episode released. So it's a massive project, and it's extremely rewarding.
Yeah. So what was the research and gathering process like to pull this together? I know in the first episode, you guys have people who from New York who know about Tom Wilson, kind of were the first people to do that. But
I have been working on this project for 2.5 years at least. And it's one of those things that I stumbled upon myself just trying to waste some time one day. And you fall down a Wikipedia rabbit hole and then it leads to everything else. And that's how basically my discovery of Tom Wilson happened. And then the more and more I unearthed, the more and more I became focused on trying to tell that story and get that story out there. So I reached out back in early 2019, I guess, after doing a lot of work to Jacob and Katie to kind of say, hey, I have this thing. I think we can make it work. And then we've been working on it in the background since then. So this is something that, you know, I'm constantly trying to find as much info as we can to make sure we tell the full story. I'm still finding out stuff, like, as Jacob and I worked on that first episode, I still came across stuff that we didn't know that we included. Like, you talk about the scene, kind of acted out scene there. That wasn't added until we got to writing that first script. Like, we knew everything else, mm-hmm. but then I didn't come across that till we were sitting putting everything together. So it's a continuous project of making sure we have everything out there, but I've spent the good part of the last year just sitting there getting as much information as I can from as many people as I can. And it's awesome to see also how there are certain individuals across the nation, you know, like Erwin Chusid, who I got to talk to in New York, or, you know, Lindsay talked to Michael Hall with Texas Monthly. And there's just people everywhere, little blips of more info we get to add then to the story, which I think is great.
Yeah. And then, when it gets to, it's a lot of the script writing is Zach and Jacob. And then when the script finally gets to me, I'm piecing through it. And, every time like another name, another location, another date comes up, I'm going through and doing research on, who is this person and what was happening in this time. And so, a lot of the what we try to do in the telling of the story is, when dates come up. To put it all into context, because I am terrible with history. So, putting it into context, like, oh, well, this is, 1955. And this is like, oh, well, this is, the year that, like, Ray Kroc is opening the first McDonald's and also the year that Rosa Parks is getting arrested.
Right.
And so now let's tell the story from this context. And so there are, you know, little things like that, or like, you know, we're, you know, the fact that like Tom's father, you know, worked for the company that he worked for, and, you know, reading the script and getting to this point and then having to go off and research like, okay, well, you know, how much can I learn about this company and what do I need to say about this, in order to make this story really, really come together? And so one of the exciting things is that now we just have pockets of a huge amount of extra research that, I don't know, I think I would love to, and we've been kind of talking about this idea of potentially doing like little sidebar storylines, because there's so many other stories that can be told.
Yeah, so Zach, in the first episode, you say something along the lines of, in Waco, some people we remember the most seem to only have, you know, Waco as a footnote. But Tom has established roots in this city. That really, like, resonated with me because, you know, you really sit and think about all the stories that are out there that, you know, we don't know. And you think about the movie Hidden Figures and how long it took for their mm-hmm. stories to be told. And then secondly, I remember way back, Lord, it wasn't that long ago, but it seems like that in this corona time. But in 2019, I was doing this Black History Month blog, just trying to research artists and creatives that came from Waco. And there was all this history and information about Jules Bledsoe. And then I'm listening to the podcast, the first episode, and, you know, Tom Wilson is raised in the same church and has the same kind of background, but there's no building named after him. I'm looking on wacohistory.org and he doesn't have a page yet. So why do you guys think that, you know, it's been 50 years since Tom was in the studio working with all these renowned artists. What's the difference in his history and his story that's kind of kept it so low key?
That is a great question.
And
I'll try to give just as great answer as that question was, really. To me, I feel like in a lot of cases, though, that there's been a lot of history when it comes to people like, you know, Jules Bledsoe, Doris Miller, because Doris Miller and Tom Wilson both went to the same high school, too, granted years apart. But and I've been here in Waco and the surrounding area since I was born back in 1988. But I remember, like, it took a while for even that stuff. I mean, one was a World War II hero, and it took, I feel like, way too long for things to recognition to happen. And same with Jules Bledsoe, in a way. I'm hoping that since we've been able to tell these stories and people in the area can see what kind of fingerprints they had on certain things, not only in the community, but also what they went and did. I'm hoping that they can recognize the same from Tom, of how big of an impact he had on music while still having that connection to here in Waco, Texas.
Yeah, I think that part of it is that, you know, these, like Zach was saying, these stories take a long time to gather the information to put these stories together. And I think that Tom Wilson's story is just a story that just hadn't been told yet. And it was a story that was just waiting for someone to get a hold of it and to do what we're doing now in trying to tell the story. And so, you know, and I'm sure that there's, you know, a thousand other people out there from Waco in the same position where there's a story that is just waiting to be told, from waiting for someone to start doing the research and accidentally stumbling on the right thing to see and the right, you know, the right way to put the story out there.
And the beauty of this, I'll add a quick tag, is the way we've set up this show is Tom Wilson might not be the last story we tell.
Okay, good, because that was definitely the next question. but for the Tom Wilson story that you guys are telling now, you can listen to it on all platforms, all streaming platforms. So that's Spotify, Apple Music Podcast,
Google Podcast.
Mm-hmm. What is the kind of launch schedule? So people, how frequently can they expect episodes?
We're working on once a week until we get it all done, hopefully kind of coinciding to where the end of the series is around the same time, actually, as his death in September. And trying to build up to that. So that's the goal right now, is we're working on weekly getting out episodes. I will tell you, though, the first one Like, we want to make sure it's the best product we can obviously deliver. But I think we can stick to the goal is one a week, so we continue to tell this great story because there's so much still we haven't even gotten into.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Listen to the teaser and episode one streaming now on all platforms. You can stay up to date with the Invisible Icon podcast by following at Keep Waco Loud or at Invisible Icon Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. This conversation will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for content related to this episode. Catch the next episode of Conversation with Creative Waco on Friday, August 28th for more deep dives into local arts and culture. This has been Conversation with Creative Waco on KWBU, and I'm your host, Kennedy Sam. Thanks for tuning in.